Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice. We also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us. And today is Thursday, October the 9th, 2014. Kind of got ahead of myself in the chat room. I said, welcome to Aramaic Friday. And then it was like, oh, not yet. This is Thursday. So I'm a day ahead. But this is Thursday, October the 9th, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Well, thank you, dear heart. We are once again blessed and highly favored by the fact that each of you chooses to join us. Each day that you choose to join us and support this bringing of the virus removal tool called First Century Aramaic Forgiveness. We live in a culture that tells us that forgiveness is about somebody else and what you do for to somebody else, or something you even do to yourself, you forgive yourself, and or that you are forgiven. And all of that is a fraud. All of that is a misunderstanding, purposely instilled or perhaps accidentally. Who knows? Doesn't really matter. But a good analogy would be, let's imagine that, pretty much everybody's got computers these days. Your phone, your computer, your desktop. Let's imagine that tomorrow all virus removal tools for computers are gone. There's just no such a thing left. If that happened, how long do you suppose, if we called what we do with our computers today computer life, how long would a computer life last if there were no virus removal tools? It just really boggles my mind that people sit around and spend hours figuring out how to put things in that foul other people's computers. It's kind of mind-boggling. Very, very non-human. Imagine that there's just no tool of forgiveness left, virus removal left, then, probably within a month or two, computer functionality as we know it would be gone. Now, kids coming up in the world of that level of computer functionality is like, you just spend a significant part of your day, every day, trying to remove this interfering program and fixing that. You might, if you use your computer 4 hours a day, you might spend 3.5 hours of your day actually working on removing viruses and trying to figure out how to work around them and try to keep your computer going. And, the kid that's brought up in that environment, a world where there's no virus removal whatsoever, might think, well, that's just the way computers are. You're going to get 30 minutes of productivity out of 4 hours of time because you have to work around all those viruses. And that's just the way it goes. And, that's a perfect analogy for the disappearance of forgiveness. You look at the average person in our culture. You look at what you see on television, in movies, that's portrayed as normal. And most of what's portrayed, or so much of what's portrayed, is actually on the level of a virus for the mind. and nobody's got the virus removal tool. And so we're brought up in a world where most people think, well, you know, you spend, you know, 80% of your day in fear and hostility and survival, and gee, is life going to work? Am I going to make it tomorrow? Is it going to be dangerous to go down the street? Oh, you know, a little rage from my children, from my parents, from my spouse, toward my children, toward my parents, toward my spouse. A little fear, a little terror, a little intimidation, a little manipulation, a little threat, a little gossip, a little slander, a lot of negativity. But, you know, I spend 5 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes at night really focusing on love. But, you know, that's just the way human life is, that, you know, you spend most of your day dealing with those insanities of fear and hostility and grief and rage and pain. And you look at kids coming up today, and I certainly don't envy the kids coming up today. You know, you think about the kid who was 4 years of age at the time 9/11 was being shown on television over and over and over. And the four-year-old didn't know that that was all one event replayed. The four-year-old watched it and went, oh, my God, look at that terrible, look at that person jumping out the window. And then when they saw it 10 minutes later, oh, my God, look, it happened again. Oh, look, oh, look, oh, look. They don't distinguish that this is one event played over and over. What does that implant into the mind? What does that become? And then we know now, of course, we've known for thousands of years, it was taught that the energetic insults to the human system, which were called sin back in the Aramaic, are passed on to the future generations. And now we've got geneticists who are all excited about discovering that that's true, and they're proving it in the laboratory. We've been talking about that the last few days. And so you look at the cumulative effect. If you think back to your parents, and I would offer that compared to human life, and our definition in this work of a human life is hold a newborn child. When you hold a newborn, there is no virus activated in them yet. You get the pure, the real thing. You get human life. That's how your computer is designed to operate, as our analogy. The computer's designed to operate with no care, no concern whatsoever for viruses. Your human mind, your human body, your human emotional system is designed to be as pure as that newborn child. And by analogy, we come in, those historically, genetically implanted, environmentally implanted, experientially implanted rages, guilts, griefs, hates, fears, condemnations, gossip, slander, vengeance, negativity, those things become implanted, sadly, in many cases, by our power person. And we say to ourselves, brought up in that environment, oh, well, I guess that's human life. I get 5 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes in the evening, but the rest of the day I have to struggle to survive. And, you know, it's a nasty world out there. And, you know, it's people are really terrible. And, you know, it's, and you know, and you know, and you know, and you know. Folks, my offering is that what passes for human life today contains very little or no human life. It has been totally, completely eaten up by viruses. Totally, completely eaten up by those energies that never belonged in our system. Now, we've gone for almost 2,000 years without the virus removal tool. We've been told that the virus removal tool is about letting other people off the hook because there's a virus in you. If your physiology is capable of rage, notice the language that you use. Oh, my spouse really enraged me. Now, that's denial. When I talk about something outside of me or I think about something outside of me as having caused something to happen inside of me, I'm in denial, and now I've cut myself off because through denial I go into dissociation. I dissociate from the part of my mind that holds that virus. And so when I live in a world of virtually everyone talking about how everybody else is responsible for what's going on inside of them, you know you live in a world that has no tool for removing the viruses that are infecting the system. And virtually every child that comes into the world is infected by the insanity of the world. And so what passes for human life isn't. Because one has a human body does not mean that there's a human life in it. Hold the newborn. There has to be that component for their actual life. I kind of thought back months ago that it was a to come up with the thought, oh, this isn't human life, was a new discovery on the planet. Until I ran into a quote from a rabbi, first century BC, I don't remember his name right now, but he said, in a world where there is no human life, we must strive to be human. Who's got the courage to face 1,000 generations of implanted viruses within the structure? Who's got the courage to say, I'm going to face that? I am going to literally remove my capacity for any form of hostility or fear and return to my human life, so that when I stand in the presence of my spouse, I am the active presence of love. When I stand in the presence of my children, I am the active presence of love. Well, Michael, what if they do this? Well, whatever they do, you'll notice that what they do doesn't cause what's happening inside of you to happen. You'll notice that whatever it is that you don't like that's happening inside of you, the viruses you carry, you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people. It doesn't have to do with your spouse. It doesn't have to do with your children. It doesn't have to do with your parents. It doesn't have to do with your employer or your neighbors. It always comes back to me. Am I willing to choose a human life? Am I willing to choose to stay in that pure space of being, whatever anyone else is doing? Well, Michael, that's just impossible. That's a utopian dream. Well, without the virus removal tool, that's true. You know, for the kid who comes into the world and, you know, the computer's just, well, you spend 3.5 hours for working around the viruses and the interfering programs and such. That's just the way computers are. Imagine the child that discovers the computer is totally virus-free, and they sit down and they spend 4 hours productively doing what it is they want to do with their computer. Imagine the excitement if one has lived in a world where 3.5 hours out of every 4 spent on the computer, you have to be fooling around and working around viruses and interfering programs. Imagine the excitement of the child that discovers, oh my God, I can sit down at the computer for 4 hours and I can actually get 4 hours of productivity done. Imagine living in a world where you have totally and completely removed all infectious energy from your system. You know, there's a big conversation going on about Ebola. Ebola is just the end result of the viruses slid into the mind of non-humans and reinforced and reinforced and reinforced, and it's an attack thought manifest. It's attack thoughts manifest against self. Self-hatred, self-deprecation, sadly taught by many religions. Now, you won't find many have been taught it that will admit it, but that's what's been taught. And that Ebola is the end result of self-attack. Who's got the courage to say, I'm going to take the tool, I'm going to apply it, so that whatever everybody else is doing, I am clean and clear of rage and guilt and fear and hostility and sadness and terror and trauma and gossip and slander and negativity. Who's willing, who's got the courage to do that much work? That's our invitation to you. That's what we are literally inviting you to do when you engage upon this path. And as you come to the point where you experience other people perhaps still doing all the stuff they've always done, you know, the boss is grumpy, the spouse is nasty, the children are angry, blah, 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 blah. They're all doing their thing, but you, not having a virus in your physiology, stand fast in your human life as the active presence of love. What do you suppose that's going to change in your world? Our offering is, it's not only possible, but ultimately it's inevitable. Everyone on the planet will return to that state. 1,000 years ago, the physicist Yeshua said a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. He was talking about critical mass in physics. He wasn't talking about bread. He was saying if enough of us have the courage to stand in that space of love, then we together will create an energetic field that will touch every mind, heart, and being on the planet and change the game for eternity. Imagine a world where hostility and fear are an impossibility. And each one functions out of their own original creative self. Now, for one brainwashed in hostility and fear, that seems like the impossible dream. But it's not only possible, it's inevitable. It's happening. People are doing it, stepping up to the plate. And when their spouse says this, instead of puking all over their spouse and playing the blame game, it's their fault, they're stopping and saying, ah, here I am again, back in my old virus. I think I'll forgive this. As their children being taught, ah, I'm angry. I think I'll change that state of mind in myself. I think I'll forgive. And so when you think forgiveness, think removal. In fact, you might go so far as to think virus removal. Hostility and fear in all of their forms and all of their expressions are nothing but viruses within the human system. Think removal, virus removal, when you think forgiveness, rather than what we've been taught by the world, and this is virtually universal. I'll let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. I have this virus called guilt or grief or fear, but I'll forgive you. I'll let you off the hook, or I'll even forgive myself for having that. Doesn't cut it. That's not forgiveness. That's pardoning, which is a nice thing to do. But forgiveness is the act of going inside yourself, taking responsibility for what you've produced within your own physiology, and removing what. If you haven't run into that technology before, we invite you to go to our website, which is www.whyagain.org. And right in the front page, you'll see a link to a worksheet. You can go to that worksheet, or maybe a better idea would be there's a bullseye in the middle of the page. Click the bullseye, and as you click the bullseye, you'll see a whole series of links open up, and there's an explanation as to how to move into this forgiveness process, how to acquire for yourself the skill of removing what never belonged, and the technology of the mind for doing it. It was invented 2,000 years ago and then disappeared. It's back. And we're asking your support to take it to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. Let's get back to human life. If somebody's brainwashed you that you don't deserve it and you deserve pain and punishment and guilt and trauma and drama, and often again that training is religious, if you've been trained in that insanity, we invite you to forgive that and return to the place where you recognize, ah, I am here to function as this awesome passion.
Michael, you just disappeared. Are you still with us?
Okay, have I returned?
Yes, there you are.
Okay, good. So, let's say hello to Dr. Tim. They're my thoughts for opening today's show. Dr. Tim, how do you be, sir?
Blessed and highly favored, as you often say.
Awesome.
Just filled with gratitude for being able to do this work and have the tools for use on myself and with myself and introduce them to others.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it, to watch the results?
Yep, it's a delight for me. I wanted to make sure that you remembered that I sent a text earlier in the week that I won't be on the show tomorrow
right.
Because I'm giving a presentation to a business group.
Yes, cool.
And so I will be with you in energy and sending love and knowing it'll be a great show and looking forward to listening to it on the archives.
Cool, and we'll hold the space that your presentation is just totally and completely impactful for everybody in your business group, and that whatever your message is, at least includes some forgiveness and opens a space for them.
Well, I'll let you know how it goes when we connect again on Monday or Tuesday.
Well, it's a Awesome. Anything exciting to report? Any thoughts on our intro today?
Well, you know, the theme that's come up for several people recently since the last time we talked is the it's so appropriate because the theme that's come up so often in sessions last night and today is people who are literally beating themselves up with judgment, negative judgments against themselves. They're not measuring up. They're not performing as well at work. They're not treating their children as lovingly as they should. They're not a good enough partner. They aren't meditating as much as they said they would. So this tremendous negative self-talk pattern. And as you were talking in the intro, I just kept thinking, that's a very apt description for this. These are viruses. This is what I learned watching my parents. This is a program running in my mind that's sitting there outside my conscious awareness waiting to get triggered by, you know, the next random interaction with someone. So it was a very on-target intro for me and what I've been working with people for the past, well, ever since yesterday's show. So,
well, one of the thoughts that comes forward, as you say, that people beat up on themselves for all the things they've done wrong, is that by extension, when someone beats up on another, we become very good at denial. We become very good at hiding. But every time we think a negative thought toward another person, you know, scheming about how I'm going to do this or how I'm going to do that or what's wrong with them or how can I force them to do what I want them to do, every time we think a negative thought, not only about ourselves but about someone else, we literally produce a neuropeptide, a molecule that goes around, slides around in the structure until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. And when it lands on that cell, it inserts itself chemically into the cell and starts to degrade the cell. So when we're beating up on another, even if it's just with our thoughts, we're creating those molecules. And it's an old habit that's gone on for 1,000 generations, so it's not an easy habit for most people to break. And so it's not only self-abuse when one beats up on another verbally, emotionally, mentally, or physically, but it, of course, then impacts others energetically if others are in resonance with those energies. You know, the person who holds the self-deprecating thought is a receptacle for everybody on the planet that holds its self-deprecating thought. The person who stops and says, ooh, this is driving myself into the ground. Who taught me this? I think I'll start to question everything that whoever taught me this mistake has taught me, because this is totally, completely not right. This is totally, completely out of alignment with the teachings of Yeshua. It's totally, completely out of alignment with the teachings of truth. And so I'm going to start to question everything that authority taught me, because, boy, catching them in this mistake is huge. And then correcting, forgiving, removing those energies, virus removal, it's just, you know, what would we be like as a species if we just weren't capable of negative thought? Now, there are people who are out there who will say, well, you know, negative, that's just part of the world. That's just the way it is. You can't do without it. The only way you can know the positive is by having the negative. And I say that's just a pile of philosophical dung. That's craziness. We have people who choose to engage in negativity, choose to do darkness, and they use the excuse of, well, you know, the only way you can know the light is by the darkness. It's like, no, excuse me, I can be looking up to the sky. No, I'm not going to look directly at the sun, but I can be looking up. I may not be able to pick out the individual star that's out there that I can pick up in the night, but the light from that star is still coming to my eye. I don't need darkness to have that light come into my experience. The light is there, and the darkness is irrelevant, totally, completely irrelevant. And so it's definitely, you know, to discover the difference of living as, and what if, what if we just couldn't think a negative thought about ourselves or another person? How different would the game be? And, you know, I know a lot of people, when I put these ideas, type of ideas forward, we'll talk about, well, you know, you got to live in the real world, you know, you got to be real. It's like, excuse me, they're realities you've built. What if you change them? What if you change what you called the real world and took responsibility for it and changed it in yourself? How different would the game be? And my offering to people is it would be totally, completely different. And that's the difference we're working to make in the world. So, Jeannie, do we have anything happening in the chat room by the way of conversation? Excuse me, that we should be aware of? And or, of course, our call-in number, 646-200-4169, if you'd like to talk to us. If you're in the phone queue, all you do is push 1. So anything happening in the phone queue, sweetie, or anybody in the chat room with the conversation to be aware of?
Nobody has their hand up, and Michelle's in the chat room with several other people, and she says that she's excited. We're down to 10 days until Sunday's Y in Lansing, and that she's working to fill the seats. And anyway, it should be an awesome time there. So nobody has a question.
Cool. Well, Michelle, we invite you to come join us on Sunday in Grand Rapids, too. I think you're going to be amazed and love the new worksheet. And we are working on the video of four-hour video of the worksheet, our standard video, probably within the next month or so, will be a four-hour Why Is This Happening to Me Again with the very latest worksheet. So I'm excited about getting that up with the video and that we're going to have that available. So if you have the space, come join us. Bring your daughter. It'd be nice to see her again. It was so cool for her to be at Heartland last summer and to hear her reports and how she's shifting and changing things as she's off in college. And, you know, the more kids we can get who get that level of comprehension and that kind of response, even though it's not what the world supports, you know, for her to be bright enough to go, wow, I can do this differently, is pretty cool. It's pretty awesome.
Perhaps there is a comment or question about us being responsible since we're all one in the world, that when there's something going on with one person or a group of people or like the Ebola or whatever, that we're all connected to it in a way. And so Michelle had actually asked, how can we take responsibility for another's thoughts? Do you have a comment on that?
Yes, my input would be that, and I love Einstein's informing us of this. It would be really cool if the medical world would tap into it. And what Einstein says is that if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. We have bought into an optical delusion. The picture our brain shows is that we're separate from everybody else. And the truth is that we are all linked and all connected in one body. In the ancient teachings, it was called the mystical body of Christ. Nobody knew exactly how to explain it, but I think Einstein does a pretty good job with that quote. So because we are individuated, you know, I am an individual, you are an individual. Because we are individuated does not mean we're separate. And so when I think of the person who has Ebola, when I think of this man, with, you know, just this morning passed away, and I think of the way that the media is terrorizing people, you know, the latest media hype is how, oh, we have to burn this body and then we have to hermetically seal it because it's a terrible thing. The terrible thing that we all need to deal with is our own minds. Fear is the most dastardly and disastrous disease on the planet. And it is sold wholesale all across the globe. Is there a conspiracy in that regard? Absolutely. And conspiracy, the root of the word, means to breathe together, conspire, to breathe together. And more directly, in our culture, the word conspiracy means when two or more people get together and choose to create a certain scenario or to move in a certain direction. And I love to invite people who have been brainwashed to reject anything to do with conspiracy. You know, don't look behind the curtain, but who've been brainwashed to reject conspiracy by calling them people who would catch those who are conspiring at their game to call them conspiracy nuts or conspiracy theories. So there's a simple piece of research that we can all do to determine whether or not there is a conspiracy to bring negativity into the world and to perpetrate that, especially on children. And the research you can do in your own home, you can invite everybody in your world to support you in doing this research by turning in a research report on it. And here's the report. Here's the piece of research. Sit down in front of your television set for an hour and spend no more than 3 minutes on any station, flipping at least every 3 minutes from station to station to station. You've got a piece of paper in front of you. You draw a half-inch margin down one side of the page, and you turn on the TV. Every time that you hear a word that actually represents that awesome presence of love that is human, i.e., again, our definition of a human is hold a newborn child. Every time you hear a word, and words are frequencies, that represent that on your television set, on any station, put a check mark in the half-inch margin. Every time you hear a word based in hostility, fear, sarcasm, negativity, put a check mark on the other side of the page. Everybody who engages in that research will come up with precisely the same result, absolutely reproducible by every researcher on the planet who would do that. They're going to fill pages with those things outside of that half-inch margin before they get one half-inch margin completed. That's called a conspiracy. I don't care if you're on Channel 2 or Channel 3 or Channel 4 or Channel 17 or 27 or 97 or 997. The result is going to be the same. That's a very definitive, provable conspiracy. The negative mindset, sadly, has taken over the world. So, if we are part of that, what can we do about it? Ah, my individuated energy field, which is part of the whole, can become an instrument for changing the whole. So instead of fear about Ebola, I apply forgiveness to remove my fear. And when somebody talks about Ebola or whatever else is going on, whether it's, you know, the latest terror attack or how your boss is going to do it to you again or your spouse has already done it to you and certainly going to do it to you again, so you better get out of Dodge, you know, instead of buying all that bunk and that mind energy and those words, and you listen to Yeshua and he says, the power of life and death is in your words. These are frequencies. These are literal energies that turn into chemistry in your cell. So as an individuated piece in the puzzle, I can go in and feel and heal my fear, my rage, my guilt, my grief, my pain around whatever's going on in the world, whatever's going on in my family system. I can heal those things until, and the standard we invite is until I come to the point where I take responsibility for everything that is less than love that comes up inside of me instead of pretending that it's somebody else's. And I transmute that. I change that energy pattern. And as each of us does that, when we reach a critical mass, when we get enough people who will do that, Ebola is going to disappear, as will rape and murder, war. Those things are going to disappear from planet Earth. But they're all based in fear. So each individual cell within this mystical body that buys into the fear is a contributor to all the things that they say they hate and they don't want to see happen. Yeshua called that a house divided against itself. And he said, a house divided against itself can't stand. I can't function as a human life, as love, and play the game of hostility and fear. Well, but all those things out there to be of Michael. Yes, you're right. There are. We have manifested those beautifully, haven't we? Are you willing to take responsibility to remove from your structure those frequencies of hostility or fear that help in supporting hostility and fear in the world? And as we do, as individuated cells in the whole mystical body, we open the space for a new possibility in the whole body. So that would be my take, Michelle. And if you have any thoughts about that, pick up the phone. Call us. Let's talk about it. And, you know, maybe we can refine our understanding of these things. And, you know, Dr. Kim, do you have any thoughts in that regard?
Sorry, I had to come in the other room to unmute myself. Yes, I would echo. I would echo what you have said, and I know, because when I have said similar things to people, some people literally stand up and leave the room, and they will not entertain the idea that they have that much control over the focus of their thoughts and over the impact their thoughts have on their emotions and then their physiology. And I know, because it used to sound absolutely bizarre to me when I would hear people talk like this, and it would seem airy-fairy, and it would seem pie-in-the-sky, Pollyannish, and all those other things, idealistic. And it was all of those things until I learned some of these tools. And I literally have the capacity now to stand in the presence of somebody who's raging and not buy into the fear or the rage in response. And so to anybody who's hearing this, whether it's on the archives or they're hearing it live and they're saying, well, this guy is just completely out of touch with reality, if he's saying that Ebola is simply an energy and a cleanup mechanism, and if he's saying if everybody loves, then Ebola is going to go away and rape is going to go away, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. What I would offer is pick up the tools one little thing at a time, one little trigger or irritation that you used to think created your pain, your anger, or your fear. Apply the reality management worksheet process to it. Apply the mind shifter and still point breathing to it. Prove it to yourself that the very thing yesterday or 2 weeks ago you believed was causing your pain, you can look at it now and laugh. It's like the woman who, you know, you tell the story of the woman who came to the intensive, and when she left, she said, oh my gosh, all these things that I thought were huge problems in my life, I'm laughing at them now. And then not long after she left, she called you and said, when's your next intensive? I want to come right away. And you said, why? And she said, because I got a new bunch of stuff that seems really, really important, and I can't wait until it's no longer important in my life. To yourself, try it. And don't believe a word this Dr. Rice guy is saying. That would be my input.
Putting it to work is the key. And by the way, if there's anybody who's against up against some of those issues that seem impossible to work through, we will on the 31st of October. So that's just, 3 weeks away now? We will be doing a 9-day codependence to interdependence residential intensive in Pinckney, Michigan. So if you're ready to get some of those things behind you, there's no space more awesome than that energetic space. I was talking to a woman about 3 days ago who came and did a 40-day intensive at Heartland about 20 years ago. And she had just finished having a double mastectomy. And she was calling because she wanted to come back and do some work. And it's like, well, you know, it kind of disappeared. What happened? Oh, well, you know, life is busy. But she said, and in the conversation, she said, you know, one of the things that made me come back and call you with all that's going on in my life and what just happened to me, she said, one of the things that made you come back is it often pops into my mind that when I finished that 40 days, that was the best to that point that I had ever felt in my life and the best I felt from that day forward. She said, I can just remember when I left Heartland and just how good I felt. And to someone say, well, then why wasn't that permanent? Well, this work is a process. You can remove the energies that are active in you at this moment, and then you'll feel as a normal human being's designed to feel, as that awesome active presence of love. But doing that piece of work doesn't mean that you've cleaned out your whole genetic history. You know, that experiment that was done with the rats that were shocked when they were given the smell of a cherry blossom. And then the offspring of those rats, the cherry blossom smell would be offered to them, and they'd go into terror. They'd go into fear. And those energetic patterns are passed from generation to generation. That was what was called, you know, when they talked about the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years. You know, think about it for a moment, folks. This is a pretty bright group of people. How do you get lost in a 30-square-mile area for 40 years? They weren't talking about a hot, sandy place. The desert is a code word for the unconscious. And it's taken thousands of generations to get us where we are. I can clear the current layer out. I'm not finished by clearing the current layer out. You know, you go back and you hear that story of Paul on the road to Damascus. He has a full-blown near-life experience. And the light is so powerful, the energy of it is so powerful, he can't even see. He's blinded by it. But you'll notice that later as he's teaching, he says of himself, why is it the things I would do I cannot do? And the things I would not do, the things I hate, are what I do. You know, how could he have that full-blown light experience and then later say, I'm doing the things I hate doing? I'll tell you what, when you have that full-blown light experience, virtually anything could show up in your face, you'd look at it, you'd smile, and you'd be the space. 6 months later, that may not be the case. I know that the first time I had that kind of an opening, it took about a year before anything that, you know, the day before that experience happened, you know, there were things that were stresses and strains and conflicts in my life that I was ready to get up and fight about or whatever. It took me about a year after that experience for any of those things to have any meaningful impact on me again. And what I've recognized in doing the work over these last 45 years, and that was probably about year 7 or, well, maybe year 9 or 10 that happened, I realized that what I'm doing is cleaning up layer by layer by layer. And you don't clean up 1,000 generations of insanity on a weekend or in a 9-day or in a 40-day. But you can clear enough to get a taste. You can move out enough to get a taste. And once you've got that taste will become the guide for your whole life. And so that's what we're here to support. And as I say, if you're ready to take it to the next level, we've got space in that workshop, October 31st. We'll be doing 9 days, codependence. We'll be doing why is this happening to me again, healing through relationships, communication. Did you hear what I think I said? Codependence to interdependence and still point mind shifters and still point breathing. So that'll be a 9-day residential. We've got a beautiful facility, just a little town of Pinckney, just outside of Lansing. And we'll be there the 31st of October through November the 8th. Residential workshop. We'll be doing the awesome Heartland food. You know, the Rossby's book is now available. We've just gotten it reprinted, got it back in hand. So that's available, and all things are moving forward. So if you're ready to join us for that, come and do it. It's an awesome, awesome experience. Jeannie, do you have any thoughts on that whole conversation about the layers and the negativity that comes up and needs to be healed? And any thoughts in that direction?
Well, it's definitely a process, and every time we take our work to the next higher level and to a new level of vitality where the next level goes that we get to face. So sometimes that's not fun, but what I wanted to was in reference to the conversation going on in the chat room and talking about, you know, even people who are maybe what we would consider the meanest or the angriest or the vilest or whatever, that everybody is just seeking love and they've just lost sight that it's in them. It's not something they receive outside of them. And the comment was made that, yes, and those people who, you know, seem to be doing the most harm are usually the ones that need the love the most. And I thought about the movie we watched last night, Saving Mr. Banks, and the lady, Miss Travers, who was the author of Mary Poppins. She was just so bitter and so critical and so whatever. And the guy that Walt Disney had assigned to be her driver while she was in Los Angeles just held the space, and he was just loving towards her. And I think that his presence in her life was a lot, had a lot to do with her making the shift and being open enough then to hear what Walt Disney had to say to her. It was probably
I'm
the first
that,
friend. Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm thinking that probably in the Codependence Workshop we'll be sharing that film, because it is such a brilliant piece, and I've watched it 3 times now, and this is the way it struck me last night when we watched it with a friend that we're staying with here, that it's such a brilliant piece of a window into what it takes to heal. And, you know, true story, it took 20 years for Walt Disney to get to make that film. She refused, wouldn't have anything to do with it. And the way they did the cutbacks, you know, it started out with her as a child and the trauma that her father goes through, and his name is Travers. And, you know, she's now kind of, you know, pretending to be British, not nobility, but, you know, kind of hoity-toity up there. And it shows her as the experience, you know, she finally is in financial crisis, so she has to go to Disney, but she doesn't want to do it, and she's just, I mean, she's like, if you've ever heard the term a royal pain, and I won't say where, then this woman was it, and it's a true story. I mean, they actually play some of the tapes from the original, the actual events where this film was being made, Mary Poppins. And it shows where her trauma started, how it was reinforced, and how she keeps going back and processing another little piece, bumping up against Walt Disney, whose frustration is coming up. You know, he's been trying to get the film rights for 20 years from her, and, you know, his level of frustration builds. He comes up against his own stuff, and the brilliance of the way they put it together and showing, you know, the final major healing scene that actually, and I understand it's based in the way it actually happened. She had quit the film. She left. She got on a plane. She went back to England. Disney gets on the next plane, and Disney shares with her how Mr. Banks, who's in fact her father, you know, in Mary Poppins, and her father toward the end, although she just adored him, got into a very, you know, alcoholic disease state and wasn't very kind to her. And, you know, she's just doesn't know what to do with that. And Disney shares how, you know, the character Mr. Banks, that he had his own Mr. Banks. And he shares how abusive his childhood was, how abusive his father was. And that was his Mr. Banks. And, I mean, it's a powerful scene when he talks about being beaten because, you know, he didn't get the newspapers delivered properly. And, you know, I mean, it's just a powerful scene. And that opens a space for him to share with the woman who wrote Mary Poppins that they were going to save in the film Mr. Banks. It's just so brilliantly done, and I hadn't really seen it that clearly before I watched it last night, but just awesome on what it takes and how many layers and how many levels we need to go through and what the next level is going to look like and what the next layer is going to look like. And, you know, one of my greatest hopes for people who step into this work is that they'll stay around long enough to build the brain cells to see what that process looks like and to work through it and go through it, because it's just, it is as reliable as night follows day follows night, summer follows winter. It's as reliable as that, that if you will engage in using the tools, that you will heal your life and your world. It is just as absolutely reliable. And as Dr. Tim said, we're not suggesting you believe that. Don't believe it at all. Take the tools, put them to work, and watch what happens. It's amazing. It's amazing. So we're down to, let's see, what are we down to? We've got about 9 minutes left. Anything happening in the phone queue, sweetie, or anybody with?
We do. We have two hands up. The first one is area code 810. You're on the air.
810, welcome. Give us a name. Where are you calling from?
My name is Gail, and I'm calling from Attica, Michigan. And
welcome.
I've been doing the work for quite a while, and
right.
I seem to be having more and more health challenges. And I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I just...
Let us breathe with you. For a minute, let's just take a couple of deep breaths. It sounds like maybe some grief and maybe some hopelessness is up in your face.
Oh yeah, my worksheets have been a lot about hopelessness. We went back forward again, and the girl that our son was with lies and lies and lies, and everybody believes her, and I don't understand why that keeps happening. Nothing happens positive, okay, it appears. And I was diagnosed in May with diabetes. I have rheumatoid arthritis, okay? And I've been working with Rex for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. I'm not even sure, to be honest. And Rex keeps telling me how wonderful I'm doing. You're going deeper, deeper. And I guess I thought when you heal a lot of the things that come up that the challenges get a little bit better, okay? And it's just like, okay, I had a hard time accepting the diabetes, but I have done great with it. But I went to the doctors today, and an A1C is your 3-month blood sugar, what it is. And I was 5.7, which is good, okay, because I was 6.9 and I brought it down that much. And then I went up. And I'm like, what the heck? I'm doing all this internal work, and I've been religious about my diet. I've lost 37 pounds. And it's like, and I've been a vegetarian for probably, I don't know, 13 years. I feel like I'm trying to do everything right, and things just keep building up. And I had a discussion with God. I'm like, okay, enough. I can meet these challenges. Okay, I can work through this. I can work through this. And then I had 3 joint replacements like 13 years ago, and my right shoulder has this huge bump now, so I have to go back to the surgeon for that. And I'm like, really? I just had a tooth pulled because it was so infected. Second tooth this year. We have no money because we spent it all on the lawsuit. And it's like, yeah. And yes, some of the childhood stuff is coming up. I grew up poor, and I'm reliving it.
Well, again, I'll invite you to breathe, and I'll breathe with you. And
I have a lot of sadness coming up about that because I really didn't want to go through it again.
It sounds like it's much deeper than sadness. It sounds like grief. Like you're getting in touch with some really deep old grief.
It's like, okay, I don't even have money to buy new clothes, and all my clothes are huge on me now, which is great. Please understand. And it's just, yeah, I'm feeling very hopeless. I'm just like, okay, why continue this work? Because I just keep, it just seems like more is being piled on.
Well, is more being piled on, or is more coming up? You know, when we tap into grief, grief is the energy that tends to impact the pancreas and the adrenals. And so I'd invite you to, you know, especially seeing as how you've got such close medical track of what's happening with your sugar, I'd invite you to really continue to be willing. This will prove or disprove the work to you. I'd invite you to continue to diligently work on moving through the hopelessness and the grief that you're feeling until you can look at the situation and look at it and stay connected to love. And my offering to you is that I'll bet dollars to donuts, and maybe we shouldn't use the word donuts here talking about sugar, but I'll bet your pancreas will be back to normal. It's grief that overloads the pancreas and hopelessness that leads to grief. So as you heal those thoughts, then the load will come off of your pancreas and you'll watch it go back to normal. But walking back through it is an intensification of whatever has been put into the system. And if you look back, you know, just letting go of the idea of the generational content, if you look back, you've been doing this work for 5 years, you've had, in the past, what kind of energies that engaged to lead to the surgery that you needed to have body parts replaced, how intense, how deep were the energies that were held, and how deep has it been over the period of your lifetime. And now, willingly accessing those things and moving through those things, and watch how they fit. But they're going to become intensified in your face during the process of shifting them.
I'm listening.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, but, and I was actually, I talked to Rex, I don't know, Monday or Tuesday, I think it was Tuesday. And I was okay because my granddaughter was here and she was 3, and, you know, that love, those little kids' love, I guess
that's awesome, isn't it?
I was putting it on the side, apparently. And then it's like she left, and it's like, whoa, okay. Don't know if I can do this anymore, and I know that's regulatory speech. Yeah.
Where's the level of that love that belongs to you? So you see your 3-year-old granddaughter, and she hasn't been loaded up with all the garbage, and so she's just this pure beaming love.
Mm-hmm.
That's in you too. You know, Yeshua talks about don't put a bushel basket over your light. What are the bushel baskets that you put over that pure being in you? That 3-year-old is in you. What's the bushel basket that you put over it that you can't see it or experience it directly for yourself that you have to go to her? And that's what you want to discover, is that in you. And you'll have to take them off bushel basket by bushel basket, layer by layer, grief, rage, hopeless, helpless, fault, failure, all of those things are all of the things. And it's not an easy process. That's why most people won't engage in it. Most people get a taste of it. They open the veil. They look inside and go, I can't do that, and close it back up again and just go their merry way in the opposite direction. I invite you to continue moving through, especially that grief, because, again, you've got the medical track on your pancreas, so you're going to have a way to measure very carefully what's happening, particularly handle that grief and hopelessness. And, unfortunately, we're down to the last few seconds, so I'm going to have to close this up, but I'd be delighted to carry on the conversation. If you call in late at the beginning of the show, well, actually, tomorrow's Aramaic Friday, isn't it? So we'll be doing that kind of deficit work with Aramaic Fridays. But on Monday, Tuesday, let's carry on the conversation and see if we can be of more support.
All right, thank you. You have a good day.
Okay, you two blessings, and we hold the space. And everyone, bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. Give the best gift you can give. Have the best you can give of your eternal life. Blessings.